Hello, this is Mitch Richmond, and you're listening to the Warriors Huddle podcast.
The phrase you thought you would not hear in your lifetime. The Golden State Warriors are going to the NBA Finals. Horn sounds, final score, Warriors 104, Rockets 90. The Warriors are the NBA's Western Conference champions.
We're going to bring y'all into our huddle.
You are in the Warriors Huddle with me, Bran. With me as always, my boy and producer, Scott.
Scott here.
Scotty, we are in the finals, baby. How you doing?
Boy, that is some great stuff. NBA Finals, who would have thought?
You know, I was hoping you were going to start this episode with another third-person reference. Like the last couple, you've been, well, it's been a good time in the world of Scott. We can't get one of those up front, or?
Nope. Not going to do it.
Fairly well done. Well, Bram is really disappointed with that, but I guess we'll move on, man. We got big things to go through today. The Warriors, in fact, are moving on to their first finals in 40 years. So naturally, I want to get into our observations of the Western Conference Finals and then start to talk about the real finals, although our big finals preview episode will probably be next week. But we also have an exclusive interview with Run TMC, Warrior legend, Sacramento King legend, overall NBA legend, Mitch Richmond. So for those of you who want to skip right over to Mitch Richmond's interview, take a look at the timestamp on your phone and you can go right to it. Yeah,
yeah. Hall of Famer Mitch Richmond gave us some great stuff. He at one point I asked him, what advice does he have to the Warriors as they are going through this playoff and NBA Finals run? So, in, you know, fast forward if you want to hear that.
Ooh, nice tease, Scotty. Well handled, baby. Well, enough about what's happening later in the episode. Let's talk Western Conference Finals, man. And instead of going through game by game, just, you know, talk about generalities, things that have actually stuck out to you. Here's the first thing I want to cover, the fans' reaction. You know, we have been waiting for this for, what, 40 years. And they showed outside of Oracle, and it looked like one of those, like, outdoor kegs I used to go to in high school, just unadulterated, pure fun, no organization really, just people hanging out all over the place. But I loved it, man. It was pure joy. It wasn't restrained. People weren't saying we need four more wins. They weren't kind of holding back, waiting for the actual finals. They let themselves enjoy what has already happened. And, you know, I think that's
great. But should they have been restrained? Because the goal is, I think, a championship for this team.
Sure.
Western Conference Finals, that doesn't mean anything to me. I don't even know why they have a trophy presentation for that.
It does mean something to me. I don't think they should be restrained. I think because of where they've come from to get to here, it does mean something to this fan base, certainly to this franchise. Also, this is the toughest Western Conference we've seen in, what, 20 years? I mean, we kept talking about how deep, how difficult it would be for any team to climb out of this playoff bracket and end up in the finals. The Warriors did it. You know, yeah. Now, it's not ultimate celebration. There's still something left to be had. But should they have just moved on without caring? Nah, hell no.
Well, do you think that that is actually, the Warriors have accomplished the toughest task of the season, which is surviving the Western Conference? And at this point, it's really not as challenging as what they've just gone through to beat Cleveland.
It's possible that we'll be saying that in about a month. You know, like if they roll through this next series and we're fine, then we can probably look back and say, look, they did all their work before they actually got there. Right now, LeBron's terrifying to me. You know, he's such a great player. We're hearing these things. People are saying he's, what, two championships away from being to Jordan's level. So at this stage, I'm not ready to say that, but you might absolutely be right. How are you taking this? Are you not celebrating it?
No, I think I should, you know, throw a caveat in that I think that the fans should celebrate every victory. I don't care if it's a regular season or not. Celebrate it, you know. The players, I think that's where I get more concerned with them going bananas after this type of victory, which this team did not do. I think they celebrated in an appropriate way, and I think their focus is still in the finals. But yeah, for the fans, yeah, I mean, go for it.
That's something that's always really annoyed me about baseball, that they celebrate every series win like they just won the world championship. They bust out that champagne and fire it around
the mound.
Even though they haven't won anything. But I guess I agree with that. And the Warriors did show kind of the appropriate diluted celebration. This is great, but we still have four wins coming up. For me, we've been using the word surreal a bunch of times, so I won't use it here. It's almost like a real-life unicorn has entered into my office. Like, I know it's happening. I'm here. I can see it, but I still don't believe it. Like, I don't really know what to do with it. Last night, I should have been in the streets. I've been waiting for this my whole life, you know, and as it happened, I kind of sat there blankly. It was weird. It washed over me. Like, I still can't just totally jump in and accept it. I feel like someone's going to wake me up in 10 minutes, you know, and actually this whole thing was a dream and is not really occurring.
Well, I think it goes back to this being more about the journey than I think the end result. And to me, this season has been so much fun. And even if they end up losing the championship, I still will say that this season goes down as one of the best that I've experienced from just a pure joy of watching a basketball team perspective.
You've switched that a little bit. So the last time we talked about this, you were telling me that the regular season would be more important than an actual championship run. That, what you just said, I completely agree with. I wasn't the only person who noticed how much this meant to the fans. Here's Joe Lacob right after the win.
You can understand maybe more, and we're just talking with Festus in his early 20s, a 40-year wait to get back to the finals as a longtime season ticket holder and now owner. What does that feel like for you?
Well, I mean, I feel incredibly happy for our fan base and for all the Bay Area and the players and everybody that's had a role in this. So, you know, it's a very, very exciting. It's a great achievement. We'll revel in it for about, I don't know, 12 hours. And then I think start the preparation. I'm sure they're going to start the preparation for what's about to happen in the next week.
My favorite part about that clip is the music in the background.
Joe Lacob, hip hop fan.
Yeah, you know, like, that fool is just going big. Like, that was actually in his Escalade. We didn't know it. He had hella women dancing around him or something. I like the juxtaposition between that rap behind him and then Candace Joe Lacob. I also like that he, just like we were saying about the players, understands this means something, but they need to take that next step in order for this to be a truly successful season, you know?
Yeah, definitely. I think that there was a point in the season where people realized that they need to win the championship this year. This is their year, and anything else is going to be just a letdown because this team is that good.
It was at 67 wins. You don't put up a historic win season, a top 10 win season, without creating championship expectations.
I think it was earlier than that. They were playing so well and were at the top of the NBA that at some point during the season, before the 67 wins, it became, this team should win the championship.
Can you identify that, or are you just bringing that? I mean, is there a moment in your mind where you're like, I think this team is championship or bust?
No, I can't identify it. I just, looking back, there was a switchover at some point.
Yeah, well, I obviously disagree because I think it's the 67 wins, but it is what it is. Lacob, us, we aren't the only people this meant a lot to. Here's also Steph talking about what it meant to him and the team.
Congratulations, babe. Western Conference champions.
This is special. This is a checkpoint for our main goal. We still got 4 wins. And you know, while we're still out here, is to let our fans celebrate this moment. They've been waiting for it for a very long time. And we're pretty proud of the success so far, but 4 more wins to go.
What does it mean to you, Steph, knowing the history of this franchise and know what state this franchise was in when you got here? To see you guys in this position to be 4 wins away from a championship.
This means a lot because a lot of work has gone into it. We've had guys all up and down the roster that have sacrificed coming from different places in their careers and giving us whatever we need to make this team a successful team. So starting with the coaching staff going down, this has been a special year, a long time coming. And like I said, it won't feel right unless we get 4 more.
It's worth noting that way the hell back when, in November of 2009, which is Steph's rookie year, he tweeted out the following. Tweet, promise to all the Warrior fans, we will figure this thing out. If it's the last thing we do, we will figure it out. They did. They got there. You know, they need to win the finals. But when he's talking about what this means to the organization, what it meant for them to finally reach this level, he has been promising or at least intimating that this team could, in fact, bring it together since he was a rookie way the hell back in 2009 when Monte was announcing to the world that they couldn't play together, when everyone else thought he was too slight to be an all-star, let alone an MVP. This has got to mean so much to him, man. Even if he's not a demonstrative guy and needs to say, look, you guys didn't believe in me, but you have to now, it's got to reach that level, right?
Yeah, I mean, that's a strong quote. Good find there, because no one thinks about Curry as being that type of, like, vocal leader in the sense that he was making proclamations like that from his rookie year. But that's the vision that he has, and it's the one that he has had, and he's just following the path that he sees.
They had 26 wins that year. 26 wins that year. And when he tweeted that out, they were 2-6. It was right in the beginning of a god-awful year. So imagine what the hell that means to him. Incidentally, I mean, great transition. What do you think of Steph during this run?
Boy, I think... So, you know how, like, Steve Jobs took a bunch of acid, they said, and that really allowed, like, it said it opened up his mind and he saw things in a whole new way. And
I'm so excited for this analogy.
It's like Steph Curry, I don't think that he's done acid, but
damn it,
the way that he plays and the way that he creates situations are things that I've never seen a basketball player do or play. And it's like he had this mind-altering drug that has allowed him to see and play in positions in ways that I never thought were possible. And it's like Steve Jobs creating these iPhones and iPads and giving me technology that I didn't even know that I needed or would find super useful. He's doing that for me in basketball.
I suddenly like Steve Jobs way more. I did not know that acid thing, so that's awesome. I also like the idea, if we ever somehow get Steph on this podcast, one of your questions will be, did you take some mind-altering drug that helped you through this? You know what really stuck out to me, man, is that this fool stepped up to meet his critics. It wasn't too long ago that I was receiving texts from you, jumping off the bandwagon. They had just lost games 2 and 3 to Memphis, and everyone was saying Steph is wilting in the face of the MVP, that this award was too heavy for him, and now he can't step up to the plate, that we all expect those kind of great things. After those two losses and all those expectations went down, he dominated. I pulled this from an article from Tim Kawakami. He said that after those games 2 and 3 losses to Memphis, Curry averaged 31.7 points going into last night and hit 33 of 66 three-point attempts. So he averaged more than 50% at the three-point line. I mean, he came out roaring. He went the exact opposite way, which was just awesome, man. This guy is slowly developing that mentality where you can count on him every single night.
Oh, he's been on a complete tear and back to hitting ridiculous three-pointers. There's multiple times during every game where I just start laughing because it's so ridiculous, the stuff that he does. But how about that fall?
Okay. So many. How terrified were you when that happened?
At first, I wasn't that terrified, actually, because if you look, like when they showed the first replay, you see he rolls over, he grabs his head. So he's moving, he's with it. But then he just lays down with his head on the court for so long.
That fall made me even more of an asshole than I already am. I was watching the game at the house. I was with my wife. And she asked me some totally harmless, innocuous question. What do you want for dinner? I don't know what the hell it was. And I'm so nervous that Steph got hurt that I didn't hear her the first time. So she asked me again, Bram, you know, what do you want to eat? And I go, give me a second. You know, our whole season is right here. So the anxiety levels went absolutely through the roof. Steph can barely dunk, from what I can tell. How the hell did he jump that high? I mean, he was like over Ariza's head. Why did that happen?
I know. That must have been some weird adrenaline rush where his body was able to jump higher than he ever thought he could before, because it was like he was at the rim. His chest was as high as the rim. It was insane.
And the walk that he apparently took after that injury. So, you know, he finally gets up and he has to go into the locker room. They're going to run him through all these tests. I don't know where the visiting locker room is in that arena. Is it in Oakland, California? Because there has never been a longer walk by an injured player ever.
No, I was watching it with my neighbor, and I said the same thing because it was 3 commercial breaks, and at every commercial break, they showed Steph Curry, and he was still walking to the locker room.
Oh, yes. And, like, honestly, if it's that long, do they not have wheelchairs? Yeah. They can't help the man get to this locker room that is 80 miles away? It was completely ridiculous. The only upside, the thing that really impressed me that I liked about it, so Steph gets hurt, and then because Steve Kerr is mic'd up, we get to hear what they say in the huddle. And what he says was, there's a weird vibe in here. We need to take advantage of it. Because remember, at that point, they were down, 15, 16. I love that, Scott.
Yeah.
You know, that Steve Kerr is watching his shot at a championship walk a never-ending walk towards the locker room. He has no idea what the hell happened to Steph. Instead of being confused, instead of not knowing where to go, instead of being depressed, he tried to take advantage of it. He told his team, and he was right, there was a weird feel, and back they came. If that was Mark Jackson, I think he'd be leading them in a team prayer. He wouldn't have the wherewithal to kind of use this to their advantage. I loved that, man.
Well, and it worked. It worked. They mounted a comeback.
Yeah.
Klay Thompson finally got going for the first time in a long time, and unfortunately, Steph came back, and it all went downhill from there. And I think that's natural, because when your star does go out, everyone steps up.
Right.
Then you get him back, you're like, okay, cool, I can kind of relax.
Take your foot off the gas, sure. Yeah. When he shot that first ball and it was an air ball, like super short way to the right. Obviously, he found himself and we're fine. I was terrified again then too. You know, I was like, Jesus, how bad was that fall, man?
Yeah, that was a terrible first shot. And then he started like getting blocked. And
take me to the other side of the MVP race, to Harden, all right? Because we really have seen a stark contrast between what he brought. Harden was dominant in game four, came out and put up 45 points. He was a burger in game five, had a 13 turnovers, the most ever in a Western Conference Finals game. When you look back on this, what are you going to remember? What's the defining play for Harden?
Well, that was the worst elimination game I think I've ever seen a star play. It was, I mean, he was terrible. I'm not sure that Harden is the type of guy you can ever rely on to lead your team to the championship.
Why?
Because I don't think he's clutch. And he doesn't have, he's kind of a head case when it comes down to the end of game situations. Exactly right. We saw in game three when he had a chance, or no, it was game two, when he had a chance to win it and he blew it there.
Yep.
And then just making really, really bad plays in the elimination game. So, yeah, I mean, you can rely on him to score. He's going to fill it up at times, but he's not consistent.
Well, in that Clipper series too, right? When they made the huge comeback in game six, he was on the bench. You know, he'd played no part of that at all. You know what the defining moment for me is? And Harden's a hell of a player. You don't put up 45 points in a Western Conference Finals game without being a great scorer, right? But the thing that struck it to me, and I'm going to start it with too long of an analogy, I apologize in advance. I can remember when I was taking like Scantron tests, multiple choice tests in school. If I missed like four or five in a row, I'd get into this weird headspace where it'd almost be like, ah, like I wouldn't even pay attention anymore. I'd accepted my failure and kept going. And if I was smart, I would have to literally like stop, go to the bathroom, look myself in the mirror, like, get your shit together. Don't let this failure snowball. I thought that Harden was doing exactly that. Sometime in like the third quarter, the fourth quarter, I think Mark Jackson actually said, I don't like the look in his eye. He seemed to accept his failure. Like almost like, I don't even care anymore. You know, he started fouling, started taking terrible shots. You're not always going to have your game, man. You know, maybe the jumper's not falling. You know, maybe things are not going your way. A real winner would have found a way to contribute even if his shot wasn't there. Harden did the exact opposite. It's almost like he became a black hole. That's unexcusable for me.
Yeah, especially from your leader. And I think calling back to that Clippers game where Houston made the big comeback, not only was it telling that he was on the bench for that, but he was also pretty silent on the bench.
Yeah,
you know, maybe clapping every now and then.
No, but like he's sullen. Yeah,
he's not the type of guy who's going to say, I'm not going to let this happen to my team. Somebody is going to step up if it's not me and get everyone else going.
Right.
He just kind of disappears. Question about him, do you think he keeps that beard long in order to help him exaggerate his head fake thing when he because he's so good at drawing fouls and he throws his head back on almost every jump shot, and does the beard exaggerate that?
I think that he is it definitely exaggerates it, the way that it kind of vibrates whenever he gets hit. Incidentally, that is the filthiest beard this side of Kimbo Slice that I have ever seen. Does he wear it on purpose to accentuate those fouls? I don't think so. You know, I think that it's kind of become its own marketing technique, and he gets all fired up about that. But there's no way he doesn't notice it, and there's no way that that's not a huge advantage, you know?
Yeah, and one thing that really annoyed me about the Houston crowd, and it relates to James Harden, is how they kept chanting MVP when he was at the free throw line. He wasn't the MVP. Like, there's one thing to do it during the season, but at this point, it's been decided. Steph Curry's the MVP. Stop chanting it.
I have zero respect for the Houston crowd. In game three, when the Warriors came in there and just beat the goddamn hell out of him, and Steph was having that hell of a game, there was that dude who was standing up front. Remember this. The guy in the red shirt, they gave out red shirts to everyone, who tried to, like, heckle Steph, and then Steph turned towards him, and he immediately gave him a high five, and then for the rest of the game was, like, seemingly cheering for Steph.
I couldn't tell. Who was that guy? Do you think he was a Rockets fan or a Warriors fan? I couldn't tell.
He was in Rockets gear. I mean, he had a big red shirt.
He kept like cheering for Steph Curry.
Assuming he was a Rockets fan, from that moment on, I immediately lost respect for them. You know?
What about the guy next to him with his wife? And there's that moment where Curry stood and said something to another guy a couple rows back. Yeah. But did you see? I don't know if you saw her face, but she looked so terrified of Steph Curry, which is like, how can you be terrified of Steph Curry?
I was too busy watching that other fan try to blow Steph to actually watch that happen, but I'm sure it was an amazing reaction. Back to other observations. Playoff Barnes, You know, I was talking to Resi last week that he really is a new person. That's a real thing, man. Like, this dude looked like Dominique Wilkins last night. Like, I don't know where the hell this is coming from. I don't know if he can bottle it. I don't know if he's going to get some contract he doesn't deserve because he's become this guy. But for right now, I trust in playoff Barnes.
He truly took over that game last night in the truest sense of the word. I mean, just dominated when they needed it most.
Yeah, hell yeah. And it's actually kind of a good transition to this point. Last night, in fact, throughout this series, the Warriors were kind of doing everything that the front office envisioned them doing when they signed him. You know what? Steph and Clay were the backbone of the offense. Draymond and Andrew Bogut were the tough guys and the centers of the defense. Iguodala was contributing off the bench. Sean Livingston has become an extra ball handler who can score from the post. Harrison Barnes is an athletic slasher. Like, all these wish lists that they had when they put these guys together is actually happening. You know, Myers did deserve that front office executive of the year, man.
I don't think it actually, it doesn't always happen in every game, but he's there's so many different options that some of them are always going to hit some game because, yeah. I mean, Livingston has been pretty awful the last couple games, and Iguodala will sometimes hit, and like Barbosa, but they have enough. I mean, Clay's kind of been off, but then he'll have a second quarter that's huge. So they have enough options all the time that even when somebody's not doing well, somebody else steps up.
Yeah, you're not going to hit on all the cylinders all the time, but that's where depth comes in and makes a big difference. Speaking of depth, your boy Festus Ezeli.
Man, he played so great last night.
I think of you every time he does something. Do you feel like, you know, you guys are kind of best friends now? Like, does it mean a little bit more because of your interview or what?
Oh, man. I definitely love seeing him play well. And he just has some monster dunks. Also, I love the way he was defending Howard because Bogut just loves to, like, give Howard a lot of, like, pushing and shoving, and they're always getting into it. And Festus didn't get into Howard like that and just played good defense.
You just answered my question without answering it. The fact that you're saying that Bogut was probably lesser to Festus shows me that, yes, you have developed a relationship with him. That's fantastic. I'll give you one more softball so that you can hit it out. Is Festus Ezeli a starting center in the NBA?
It seems to come up multiple times during every broadcast between Mark Jackson and Van Gundy. And I definitely think that he is, for sure.
I think so, too, especially since the big man is basically dying. I didn't want to take this shot, but I will. No one cares about Mark Jackson, so I'll keep it short. There was something so ironic about Mark Jackson giving coaching suggestions while watching this series, especially like, here's what I would do. I would take Bogut out here, or they need to put somebody in here. Newsflash, buddy. We don't give a shit about your coaching suggestions. You got fired from this job, so why don't you go ahead and keep those to yourself?
Yeah, and also, it wasn't until I think last night that Mark Jackson finally opened up and started sharing stories about his time coaching the team. It was like he didn't know these guys and didn't know some really good, like, inside nuggets about each of them. He kind of kept them under the vest. And then finally last night you started to hear some of them.
They probably had a meeting with him. Like, look, you better start dropping some gems because that's why the hell you're here. There was a moment last night where I felt like Van Gundy, although he was speaking to the millions of viewers everywhere, was talking straight to Mark Jackson because he goes, God, this team is so much different from last year.
Oh, my God,
They're so much deeper. They have all these other people. Like, I half envisioned Mark Jackson sobbing in his arms as he, like, rubbed his back and explained that to somebody else. What the hell are you talking about, Van Gundy? This team is not that much different than it was last year.
I felt really, really awkward. The first, when he said it at first, I think it actually came off being really bad, and then he realized it, and so then he started talking about, just different in personnel.
And Mike Breen just shut the hell up during that entire thing. He just let them have their lovers moment and then backed out. Last couple of points, then we'll start talking a little bit about the finals. One, I was wrong about Jason Terry, man. I got all excited the whole time. I wanted to hate him so badly. They mic'd him up. He didn't say anything obnoxious. He didn't really have any, like, asshole moments. I never really got my opportunity, man. He seemed hateable, but he wasn't.
No, that's true for a lot of the Houston guys, actually. I tried to hate Ariza because he was involved in both the Steph play and then giving Klay Thompson head bashing,
but neither of which were, like, in particularly dirty, right?
Right,
like, couldn't really turn on him.
Yeah.
The other thing, and I'm going to give you a little bit of shit about this, we argued about things that might be harbinger for bad things to come, why the Warriors might not be able to do it. And one of them was that there hadn't been any close games during the regular season, so we didn't know how they'd finish it out. This series, you know, they won 5-1, but with the exception of Game 3, really, these games were pretty close. The scores ballooned a little bit towards the end, but they were fairly close, and the Warriors were fine. You know, they stepped up to the close moments. Those lack of close games before didn't seem to affect them.
Yeah, well, we'll see if they can also then translate that into the fact that they have no finals experience, and Cleveland does, so are they going to be able to win close games when it's the finals or even just regular games in the finals because the spotlight is so different?
Just LeBron, right? Does anyone else on Cleveland have finals experience?
I'm not sure about the rest of the players there, but definitely, obviously, LeBron. But I think that could be it.
All right, let's turn our attention to the finals. And I want to do a full matchup breakdown next week. When we have a little bit of time, do some research, maybe pull in a beat writer or two so we can get some opinions that are better informed than ours. But I do have some general questions for you. Let me start this way. You fired up at the Cavs? I mean, were you hoping for another team out of the East or best case?
Oh, I love going against LeBron.
Yeah.
I mean, that's just going to be a lot of fun. I can't believe it's so far away.
Jesus Christ. Well, especially, I mean, it's like forced withdrawal. You can't give me NBA playoff games every single day for a month and then ask me to wait for a week. That is absolutely insane. Well,
why can't they move it up? I don't understand that.
And Silver seems to be like the kind of guy who bucks convention. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I'm surprised. They talked about maybe moving it up to the second. Sounds like that's not going to happen. Is what it is. I'm also looking forward to LeBron. I mean, we're getting like clutch, prime, you know, in his absolute best LeBron, and that's always great to see. Also, those other Eastern teams, honestly, I don't give a shit about. Like the Hawks, yeah. Who cares at all if they have made it?
Right, from the perspective of watching basketball, I don't care at all about the Hawks players. I don't enjoy watching any player on that team. Yep. LeBron is exciting to watch.
Who's the best player in this series? And I'll fire this one off first. It's got to be LeBron now, right? I mean, as much as I love Curry, despite the MVP, LeBron's sitting on two titles still. You know, he's a little bit further on in his career. Like maybe if you're looking forward, you'd go to Steph because he's got, you know, longer to go. But as of right now, you'd have to say LeBron's probably the best player.
Yeah, and he's got four MVPs.
Does he have four? Is that true?
Huh. Yeah, I think that's right. Okay. And if I'm picking a team, I'm still picking LeBron first.
Yeah. You mean right now?
Yeah.
I mean, this is where I'd like to say you're full of shit and, you know, Steph's so much better and he's younger and his contract's better. But, I mean, LeBron's the best player on earth. Man, he's the best player in the world. So you're probably right there. Most tortured fan base. You know, we have heard forever that Cleveland has not had a championship for however long, that these guys are just absolutely tortured. The Warriors have not seen a finals since 40 years. What's your vote?
Well, tortured, I guess, because they live in Cleveland. That if you
shots
just
fired.
Take out that factor. It's a close call, man. It's a close call. I think, particularly if you're going to say basketball wise, I think Cleveland's got to be more tortured just because they don't have the history that the Warriors do. With you know, if you go back past the 40 years. You know, you got some championships there.
You mean the one championship in 75 that we've had here? I'm definitely on the other side of that, buddy. The Cavs. Cavs were in the finals in 2007. The Cavs were in the Eastern Conference Finals in 2006. The Cavs have won two lotteries. In fact, is it three? How many lotteries have they won where they got the number one player overall?
Three.
So save the whole tortured stuff. Good luck on winning a championship. But I don't want to hear anything that you guys have suffered forever. Warriors aren't winning crap. We haven't made the playoffs, let alone the goddamn finals. We haven't been making it to the Western Conference Finals until this year. And I don't remember any draft, windfalls. The one time we got the number one pick, we ended up with Joe the Giant Loser Smith. So I'm going to go ahead and give that to the Warriors fan base. Two last questions. One, who's the clubhouse leader for the most annoying Cav?
I think J.R. Smith.
Yeah.
I really do. His whole attitude, the swagger, just pisses me off. I don't like it.
It should seem really obvious, and I don't have an explanation for this. I think I like J.R. Smith, and really? I don't know why. It doesn't fit with anything I've ever said ever on this podcast. Give me a couple weeks of watching him, you know, play well against the Warriors, and I'm sure I'll flip over, but I can't immediately embrace that. My guy is Dellavedova.
I knew you were going
to pick. The injury master. He's trying to hurt fools left and right. He looks like slightly homeless. You know, he's the type of dude where if he's playing for you, you love him, but if he's against you, he's going to hate you. I think that's going to be the guy, man.
Well, and I think he'll definitely be the guy because he might have one of those games like he did against the Bulls,
right,
where he scored like 19 and hit like six threes, and you're just like, what, Dellavedova?
That's exactly right. Like, I don't know, who is this dude? He looks like the, like,
who eighth, is he? Who the is he?
8,000th fan who came in, and they're like, you know what? You get to play today. And he somehow came out and played well.
Where do you come from? I've never even heard Eastern, of the guy until this playoffs.
Eastern Europe? I definitely don't know anything about. From the street, like I said, he looks homeless, but I guess we'll find out. Last question. I had this fight with a Laker fan recently, and it's too early, you know, and I'm jumping the gun, but I want to get your opinion on it because you're a little bit more calm than I am. What he said was that if the Warriors win this year, it's an asterisk championship because they've made it through a series of hurt teams. When they played Memphis, Conley was limited. When they played Houston, Patrick Beverley was out and Domo was out. When they played Cleveland, Kevin Love won't be there. So from your perspective, you know, as a fan, does that mean anything? Do you care that we're playing hurt teams?
Well, first off, that's a classic Lakers fan. They still try to give Detroit Pistons fan a lot of crap for the fact that Magic was hurt during the 89 finals.
Is that true? Is there a lot of interaction between Detroit and LA fans?
Yeah, that was a big rivalry for a minute there. No, there's just no way that there's an asterisk on this. Every single season players are hurt. Every single season guys get injured at different times and things happen that... Every season would have an asterisk if you want to go by this rubric.
I don't care at all about if they're hurt. If right now it came out that Cleveland's decided to forfeit, we're not even going to play the finals. They're just going to come and hand us the championship. I would run outside and turn over a car in celebration. I will celebrate like nobody's ever seen. I don't care if it got lucky or if we didn't. I don't care if people are hurt or healthy. What I care about is that my favorite team won a championship. And if that bothers you as a Laker fan, my championship just got even sweeter.
Yeah, I'm totally on board with you there.
Enough about the finals. We'll cover it in much more detail next week. Let's take a quick break, and then when we come back, let's throw it over to you and legend Mitch Richmond.
All right, I'm here with Hall of Famer Mitch Richmond at the Thuzio Executive Club. What is a particular moment from the Run TMC seasons that sticks out in your mind, a particular game, a story, a practice?
There's so many memories of that team. You know, we got along so well. So a lot of memories that I can, you know, kind of pull from. But just unique of the team that we had. You know, we were kind of like a college team. We all stayed in the same area. You know, we ate together. You know, went on vacations together. And I think just the unique of just, you know, being a team outside of the game, it was special.
How would you compare today's Warriors team to your Run TMC teams?
I think it's a lot similar as far as how they get along. As far as you got, you know, great guys on that team, guys don't, you know, get in trouble, you know, stay out of the media, and just go out and do their job. I think it's similar. I think they have probably a little bit more depth than we did at the time, but we had some guys that, you know, did some things in their career, but was a little older at the time with Ralph Sampson and Jim Peterson, and they was kind of, you know, coming back on, I mean, kind of winding down their career, but with great teammates. And but I think there's a lot of similarities as far as how they carried themselves as a basketball team.
If we had a 3-on-3 game of you, Tim, and Chris in your primes versus Clay, Steph, and Draymond in their primes, who wins that?
Oh man, y'all put Draymond in there? I always said I let Tim do all the talking. You know what I mean? I did all my talking on the court, but I think it'll be an exciting game. You know, I really do. But I do think we'll take them. But no, they're fine players. They're great to watch, and I'm excited for the team. And you know, always pulling for the Warriors, and love watching them play.
And who in today's game reminds you most of yourself as a player?
Wow, that's a hard one. I don't really know. I mean, I like for people to say that, but I really and truly don't know. I don't know of a guard that goes inside out. A lot of guards don't post as much as I did when I was around. So it's a lot more perimeter oriented. So I don't know who I can say. I mean, I have to ask you that question.
Do you have anyone, Sam?
Struggling to think of anyone who posts. Maybe Wes Matthews, but nowhere near as good.
Yeah, he doesn't post as much. But, yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Warriors are about halfway to the finish line. Yeah. What advice do you have for this team at this point in the season?
I think, they smell it. And you can tell that, you talk about experience with teams. They haven't been there, but I don't use that as a crutch because how well they play together. I think the experience of them being together for the last 2 or 3 years, that's experience enough. They know it's right in front of them. Won 50 games last year, got a little smell of it. But I think, when you see a group that is so focused and play the way they play. I think they just leave it out there on the floor. I don't have any, things for them to say, but just good luck.
Now, if you were to play against this Warriors team, how would you plan your attack?
Man, well, it's a team that plays defense. But it's kind of hard because they do so many dynamic things. How would I attack this team? Well, I would have to say I would have to let the team beat the other players beat me. I know Clay is a capable scorer of getting 70 or 50 points. Curry is just the 3-point line is like a layup to him. I would have to try to get it out of those guys' hands at any cost necessary, and let, Tremont and all them other guys get 60 if they can do it. But those two guys, you know that they're capable, and if you leave them open, and, I think you'd be in a situation where you're thinking too much, or should I go out, or should I stay behind the pick and roll? It's too late for those two guys. They're catching and shooting so quick. So you have to try to get it out those hand, got it out of their hands and let someone else beat them.
Now
they move the ball so well, so it's hard to do.
Yeah, no, definitely true. We had rap legend Too Short on our podcast recently, and he is a huge fan of yours.
Yes.
And he said that I think Mitch Richmond is Michael Jordan's equal.
Oh,
how what would you say to that?
Well, that's a big compliment. I love Too Short. I love you, Short. I love Too Short. I always see Short all the time. That's truly a big compliment. One of the greatest players ever played a game. And anytime your name is in the same sentence or the same paragraph with Michael Jordan, it's just a blessing. But no one compares to that guy. I mean, he was the best. Just quality person, quality guy, and we always called him Black Jesus. So he was tough to guard.
you definitely have a fan in Too Short. Last question: Warriors are playing the Rockets. How do you see that playing out? What do you think of that matchup? And then, let's say the Warriors advance. How about Hawks or the Cavs? Where do you see the Warriors going this season?
Well, I don't want to, jinx them. I know they want to take one game at a time. They beat the Rockets, I think, four times this year. I know the Rockets are, want to prove themselves that they can beat this team. I think the matchups are great. I think Houston can play small ball with the Warriors. They have capable guys at the four position. Tremont Green plays a little 3 or 4. They have Josh Smith. He has to come to play. He can't let Tremont Green outplay him. But I think that's going to be hard to do. Tremont plays with so much energy, and Josh is kind of laid back. But, I just think it's a great matchup. I think this matchup is even better than the Clipper-Golden State. I think Golden State would have swept them and would have beat them really bad. And I think, Houston right now has the capability of matching up with them. And they want to go up and down. So I'm thinking we're going to see some fun basketball, a lot of scoring. And I think if Houston has to beat Golden State, Harden has to play some defense. Because if they put him on Clay, he's going to have problems. They put him on Steph, he's going to have problems. And who's the next guy? Barnes. And Barnes is a capable scorer now. So on the offensive end, it's going to be a mismatch for whoever guards Harden. Or whoever Harden's guard, that I know they're going to go after him.
Mitch, thank you so much.
All right, thank you.
Really appreciate you guys listening. That's true every week, certainly true this week. Please remember, if you're looking for us, you can reach out on email. We're at warriorshuddle@gmail.com, and we're on Twitter at warriorshuddle. By the way, did you see that we got blocked by Tim Kawakami?
I did, and that's why I couldn't believe you quoted from him earlier in this episode.
Dude, I feel like a jilted girlfriend, honestly. Like, I'm really hurt. I wish I could have just let him go. I don't know what we did. What did
you say to
him?
I
said anything. I looked back through our timeline. I never had any direct interaction. I thought that I'd get over it immediately. I have not at all, as shown by the fact that I'm, reading his article, sobbing, screaming out the word why. It is what it is. Anyways, you can also find us on our website, which is warriorsworld.net, and we're on a bunch of podcasting services, including iTunes. Scotty?
Quick announcement. This is non-basketball related, but over the past year, I've been working on a documentary about military veterans who use surf therapy. They go out surfing as a way to cope with their PTSD, depression, and traumatic brain injuries. It's a really important film that raises awareness for these veterans' issues, and we need funds to try to finish the film. So we've actually launched a Kickstarter campaign to try to raise the necessary money for it. I'm going to put the Kickstarter link in the description of this episode. So if people are interested, you can check out a really cool trailer there. And would love to have your support.
I'm not big on asking our listeners for money in any way, but if we're contributing to getting veterans back up on their feet, there's not a whole lot of downside to that, man. So I wish you the best, and I'll definitely check it out. Go Warriors, and hopefully we'll see you in a week.
Ain't nobody better than my team.
Nope.
Money like Draymond Green.
Yep.
Ain't nobody finna crush our dream.
Nope.
Won't stop till we get a ring.
Yep.
Everybody say Warriors.
Warriors.
Everybody say Warriors.
Warriors.
Everybody say Warriors.
Good, good.